Osho, Bigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 37, given in Bombay, India.
The original mind is like a mirror. It is pure, and it remains pure. But dust can gather upon it. The purity is not lost. The dust cannot destroy the purity, but the purity can be covered. This is what ordinary mind is, covered with dust. Hidden behind the dust, the original mind remains pure. It cannot become impure. That is impossible. And if it was possible for it to become impure, then there was no way to regain the purity again. In itself, it remains pure, but just covered by dust. Our mind is original mind plus dust, Buddha mind plus dust, divine mind plus dust. Once you know how to uncover it, how to reclaim it from the dust, you have known all that is worth knowing. And you have attained all that is worth attaining. All these texts are concerned with how to free your mind from the day-to-day dust that is bound to gather upon it. It is but natural, just like travelers passing from many, many roads, dust is gathered. And from many, many lives you have been travelers, long distances you have traveled, and much dust has gathered. Many points have to be understood before we enter the techniques. One, the East is basically different in its attitude towards inner transformation from the West. Christianity thinks that something has happened to man's being itself, the sin. The East thinks nothing has happened to the being itself. Nothing can happen. It remains its absolute purity. There has been no sin. So man is not condemned in the East. He is not a degraded something. On the contrary, he remains the divine he is, he always been. And it is natural that dust will gather. Dust is bound to gather. So there is no sin, just a false identification. We become identified with the mind, with the dust. Our experience, our knowledge, our memories are dust. Whatsoever you have known, whatsoever you have experienced, whatsoever has been your past, is all dust. Regaining the original mind means regaining the purity without experiences, without knowledge, without memories, without the past. The whole past is dust. But we are identified with the past and not with the consciousness that is always present. Think it in this way. Whatsoever you know is always of the past. And you are here and now in the present. All your knowledge is dust. Knowing is your purity. Knowledge is dust. The capacity to know, the energy to know, knowing, is your original nature. Through that knowing, you gather knowledge. That knowledge is dust-like. Here and now, this very moment, you are absolutely pure. But you are not identified with this purity. You are identified with the past, the accumulated past. So all meditative techniques are basically methods to remove yourself from the past and to allow you to plunge in the here and now. Buddha was searching how to regain this purity of consciousness, how to be free from past. Because unless you are free from past, you will remain in bondage. You will be a slave. The past is heavy on you. And because of the past, the present is never known. The past is wrong. The present is a very minute atomic moment. You go on missing because of the past. And because of the past, you go on projecting in the future. Past is projected in the future. Both are false. Past is no more. Future is yet to be. Both are not. And that which is hidden between these two which are not. Buddha was in search. He went to one teacher, to other. He searched. And he went to many teachers. All the known teachers he consulted. Allowed them to work upon him. He cooperated. He disciplined himself in many ways. But he was not fulfilled. And the difficulty was this. The teachers were interested in the future. In some liberated state, somewhere beyond death, after the life is over, they were interested in some God, some nirvana, some moksha, some liberated state somewhere in the future. And Buddha was interested in here and now. So there was really no meeting. He said to every teacher that I am interested here and now. How to be here and now, total and complete and pure? And they will say, apply this method, do this, and if you do it rightly, someday in the future, in some future life, in some future state, you will attain. He left every teacher, sooner or later, and then he tried by himself alone. What he did? He did a very simple thing. Once you know it, it is very simple and obvious. If you know it, it is so arduous and so difficult, seems impossible. He did only one thing. He remained with the present moment. He forgot his past. And he forgot his future. He said, I will be here and now. I will simply exist. If you can exist for a single moment even, you have known the taste of your pure consciousness. And once tasted, you can never forget it. And the taste, the flavor remains with you. And that flavor becomes transformation. Many are the ways how to uncover yourself from your past, how to throw the dust and have a look into the mirror of your own mind. These all techniques are different ways, but with every technique a deep understanding is needed. Remember that. These techniques are not mechanical because they are to uncover consciousness, not a mechanical thing. You can use these techniques as mechanical. If you use them as mechanical techniques, you may gain a certain stillness of mind, but that is not the original purity. You may gain a certain silence, but that silence is cultivated. That too belongs to the dust part of the mind, not to the original mirror. Don't use them as mechanical. A deep understanding is needed. And with understanding, they can be helpful to uncover your own being. The first technique. In moods of extreme desire, be undisturbed. In moods of extreme desire, be undisturbed. When desire grips you, you are disturbed. Of course, natural. Desire grips you, your mind starts wavering. Many ripples go on the surface. The desire pulls you somewhere in the future. The past pushes you somewhere in the future. You are disturbed. You are not at ease. Desire is therefore a dis-ease. This sutra says, in moods of extreme desire, be undisturbed. But how to be undisturbed? Desire means disturbance. How to be undisturbed and in extreme moments of desire? You will have to do certain experiments. Only then you will understand what is meant. You are in anger. Anger grips you. You are temporarily mad. But just, you are no more in your senses. Suddenly remember to be undisturbed. As if you are undressing. Inside, become naked, naked from the anger, undress. Anger will be there. But now you have a point within you which is not disturbed. You will know the anger is there on the periphery. Like fever, it is there. The periphery is wavering. The periphery is disturbed. But you can look at it. If you can look at it, you will be undisturbed. Become a witness to it, and you will be undisturbed. This undisturbed point is your original mind. The original mind cannot be disturbed. It is never disturbed. But you have never looked at it. When anger is there, you become identified with the anger. You forget that anger is something else than you. You become one with it. And you start acting through it. You start doing something with it. two things can be done. In anger, you will be violent to someone, the object of your anger. Then you have moved to the other. Anger is just in between. Here I am, then there is anger, and then you are object of my anger. From anger, I can travel in two dimensions. Here I can travel to you. You become my center of consciousness, the object of my anger, one who has insulted me. My mind is focused on him. This is one way how you can travel on anger. That is, there is another way. You can travel to yourself. You move to the person who has, you feel, caused the anger. You move to the person who feels to be angry. You move to the subject and not the object. Ordinarily, go and move to the object. If you move to the object, that part of your mind is disturbed. You will feel undisturbed. If you move within, to the center of your own being, you will be able to witness the dust part. You see that the dust part of the mind is disturbed, but I am not disturbed. And this you can experiment in any desire, any disturbance. A sexual desire comes to your mind, your whole body is taken by it. You can move to the sexual object, the object of your desire. The object may not be there. You can move in imagination also to the object. But then you will get more and more disturbed. The further you go away from your center, the more you will be disturbed. Really, the distance and disturbance are always in proportion. More distance from your center, more disturbed. Nearer to the center, less disturbed. Just on the center, no disturbance. In cyclone, there is a center, undisturbed. The cyclone of anger, the cyclone of sex, the cyclone of any desire, just in the center, there is no cyclone. And the cyclone cannot exist without a silent center. The anger also cannot exist without something within you which is beyond anger. Remember this. Nothing can exist without its opposite. The opposite is needed there. Without it, there is no possibility. If in you there is not a center which remains unmoved, no movement is possible then. If in you there is not a center which remains undisturbed, no disturbance can happen to you. Analyze this and observe this. If there is no center of absolute undisturbance in you, how can you feel that you are disturbed? You need comparison. You need two points to compare. A person is ill. He feels illness because somewhere within him a point, a center of absolute health exists. That's why he can compare. You see, your head is aching. This ache, headache, how can you know it? If you are the headache, you cannot know it. You must be someone else, something else, the observer, witness, who can say, my head is aching. This ache can be felt only by something which is not the ache. You are ill, you are feverish, you can feel, because you are not the fever. The fever cannot feel that there is fever. Someone is needed who is beyond it. A polarity is needed. When you are in anger, and if you feel you are in anger, it means a point exists within you which is still undisturbed and can be a witness. You may not look at that point, that's another thing. You may not focus yourself at that, to that point, that's another thing. You may forget it completely, that's another thing, but it is there. Always its pristine purity, it is there. This sutra says, in moods of extreme desire, be undisturbed. What can you do? This technique is not for suppression. This technique is not saying that when there is anger, suppress it and remain undisturbed. No. If you suppress, you will create more disturbance. The anger is there and the effort to suppress is there, it will double the disturbance. When anger is there, close your doors, meditate on the anger, allow the anger to be. You remain undisturbed. Don't suppress it. It is easy to suppress. It is easy to express. We do both. Either we express, if the situation allows, and it is convenient, and not dangerous for you. If you can harm the other, and the other cannot harm you, you will express the anger. If it is dangerous, if the other can harm you more, is more stronger, is your boss or something, you will suppress it. Expression and suppression are easy. Witnessing is difficult. Witnessing is neither. It's not suppressing. It is not expressing. Not expressing because you are not expressing it to the object of anger. Not suppress because you are not suppressing it, you are allowing it to be expressed. Expressed in vacuum. You are meditating on it. Stand before a mirror and express your anger. And be a witness to it. You are alone. You can meditate on it. Do whatever you want to do, but in vacuum. If you want to beat someone, beat in the empty sky. Want to be angry, be angry. Want to scream, scream. But do alone. And remember in you a point which is seeing all this drama. Then it becomes a psychodrama. And you can laugh at it. And it will be a deep catharsis for you. After that you will feel relieved of it, and not only relieved of the anger, you will have gained something through it. You will have matured. A growth comes to you. Now you know, while even in anger, there was an interview with you which was undisturbed. Now try to uncover the interview. And it is easy to uncover in desire. That's why Tantra is not against desire. It says be in desire, but remember the center which is undisturbed. So Tantra says even sex can be used. Move in sex, but remain undisturbed. Be a witness. Go on being a deep observer. Whatsoever is happening on the periphery. You are just an onlooker, a spectator. This technique can be used very, very usefully, and much benefit can happen to you through it. But it will be difficult because when you get disturbed, you forget it. You even forget that you have to meditate. Then try it in this way. Don't wait for the moment when anger happens to you. Don't wait for the moment. Just close your room. Think some past experience of anger when you went mad. Remember it and reenact it. That will be easy for you. Reenact. Do again, relive it, not only remember, relive it. Remember someone had insulted you, and what and how you reacted to him. React again, replay it. You may not know that mind is just a tape recording device. And now scientists say, and now it is a scientific fact, that with electrodes, if your memory centers are touched, they start replaying. For example, if you were angry, the incident is there recorded in the same sequence as it went, just as on a tape recorder in your brain. If it is touched by an electrode, it starts replaying. You will have the same feeling again. Your eyes will go red, your body will start trembling and will become feverish. The whole thing will be reenacted. The moment the electrode is put away, it stops. If you give it energy again, it starts from the very beginning again. Now, they say mind is a recording machine. And you can reenact anything. But just don't remember, relive. Start feeling it, and the mind will get the idea, and it will come to you. You will relive it. In reliving it, remain undisturbed. Start from the past. It is easy, because now it is a play. The actual situation is not there. And if you become capable of doing it, then you will be able to do it when exactly the situation for anger is there, a real situation is there. And this can be done with every desire. And is to be done with every desire. This reenacting from the past will do much. Everyone has scars in his mind. Unhealed wounds are there. If you reenact them, you will be unburdened. If you can go to your past and do something which has remained undone, you will be unburdened from your past. Your mind will become fresher. The dust has been thrown away. Remember in your past what you feel has remained suspended. You wanted to kill someone. You wanted to love someone. You wanted this and that has remained incomplete. That incomplete thing goes on hovering on the mind like a cloud. It influences everything you are and you are doing. That cloud has to be dispersed. Move back on the time track and bring desires which have remained incomplete and the wounds which are still green. Relive them. They will be healed. You will become more whole. And through this, you will have the knack how to remain undisturbed in a situation which is disturbed. In moods of extreme desire, be undisturbed. Gurdjieff used this technique very much. He created situations. But to create a school is needed. You cannot do that alone. Gurdjieff had a small school in Fontainebleau. And he was a past master in how to create situations. a group is sitting and you enter the room. You enter the room, a group is sitting, and something will be done so that you get angry. And it is done so naturally that you can never imagine that some situation is being created. But it is a device. Someone insults you and says something and you get disturbed, and then everyone helps the disturbance. And you get mad. And when you are right to the point where you will explode, Guruji will shout, "Remember, remain undisturbed." A situation can be created, but in a school where many persons are working on themselves, and when Guruji will shout, "Remember, remain undisturbed," now you know this is a situation. Suddenly, the disturbance cannot disappear so immediately because it has physical roots. Your glands have thrown poison in the blood. Your body has become affected. It cannot disappear immediately. Even now you know that you have been deceived. No one was insulting you and no one meant anything. But now you cannot do. The anger is there, your body is filled with it. But suddenly deep, your temperature cools down. Only on the body, on the periphery, the anger remains. At the center, you suddenly cool down. And you know that point exists within you, which is undisturbed. You start laughing. Your eyes are red with anger. Your face is violent, animal-like. But you start laughing. You know two things now, a point which is undisturbed and a periphery which is disturbed. You can help. Your family can become a school. You can help each other. Friends can become a school and they can help each other. You can decide in your family that the whole family decides that now a situation is to be created for the father. For the mother, and then the whole family works to create the situation. When the father or mother goes completely mad, then everyone starts laughing and saying, "Remain undisturbed, you can help each other." And the experience is simply wonderful. Once you know in heart situation, a cool center within you, you cannot forget it. And in any hard situation, you can remember it, reclaim it, regain it. In the West now, one technique, a therapeutic technique is used. It is called psychodrama. That helps. And that is also based on techniques like this. In psychodrama, you just enact, you just play a game. In the beginning it is a game, but sooner or later you get possessed. And when you get possessed, your mind starts functioning, because your mind and your body, they function automatically. They function automatically. So when you see one actor acting in a drama, and when the situation is of anger and he gets real angry, you may be thinking he is simply acting. It is not so. He might have become angry. He may not be now acting at all. He is possessed by the desire, by the disturbance, by the feeling, by the mood. And if he is really possessed, only then his acting looks so real. Your body cannot know whether you are playing or you are doing it real. You may have observed yourself in your life sometimes. You were playing angry and you don't know when that anger became real. You were just playing. You were not feeling sexual. You were just playing with your wife or with your girlfriend or with your husband, and then suddenly it became real. Because the body takes it, and the body can see it. The body cannot know whether it is real or unreal. Particularly for sex, if you imagine, the body thinks it is real. Sex is one of the most intimate senses in the body. So just by imagining, you can have sexual arousal. You can deceive the body. In dream, you can have a sexual release. Even in dream, the body is deceived. You are not being loved to anyone. Just in dream, in fantasy, in nature, you are making love. Body can be sexual energy. And even deep arousal can be felt. What is happening? How the body is deceived. The body cannot know what is real and unreal. Once we start doing things, the body thinks it's real. And it starts behaving in a real way. Psychodrama is a technique based on such acts. You are not angry, but simply acting angry. And then you get into it. But psychodrama is beautiful because you know you are simply acting. And then on the periphery, anger becomes real. And just behind it, you are hidden and looking at it, and now you know you are not disturbed. But the anger is there, the disturbance is there. The disturbance is there, and yet the disturbance is not. This feeling of two forces working simultaneously gives you a transcendence. And then in real anger also, you can feel it. Once you know it, how to feel it, you can feel it in real situations also. You use this technique. This will change your total life. Once you know how to remain undisturbed, the world is not misery for you. Then nothing can create any confusion in you. Nothing can hurt you really. Now there is no suffering for you. And once you know it, you can do another thing. Gurdjieff used to do it. He was able to change his face any moment. He was laughing and he was smiling and he was looking happy with you, and suddenly he becomes angry with no cause. And it is reported about him that he became capable of this art so deeply that if two persons were sitting by his two sides, he could be angry with his half face. And he couldn't be smiling with his half face. And one person will report that what a beautiful man Gurdjieff is. And the other will say, what an ugly man. And he will look at you to this side and he was smiling, and he will look to the other side and he was angry. Once you can detach your center from your periphery, you can do it. Once the center is detached completely, if you can remain in anger, in desire, you can play with desires, with anger, with disturbances. This technique is to create a feeling of two extremes within you. They are there. Two polar opposites are there. Once you become aware of this polarity, you become master for the first time of yourself. Otherwise, others are your masters. You are just a slave. Your wife knows, your husband knows, your son knows, your father knows, your friends know that you can be pulled and pushed. You can be disturbed. You can be made happy and unhappy. If someone else can make you happy and unhappy, you are not a master. You are just a slave. The other is in hold. Just by a single gesture, he can make you unhappy. Just by a small smile, and he can make you happy. So you are just at the vagaries of someone else. He can do anything to you. And if this is the situation, then all your actions are simply reactions, not actions. You simply react. Someone insults you and you become angry. Your anger is not an action. It is a reaction. Someone appreciates you and you start smiling and feeling good and great. This is a reaction, not action. Buddha was passing from a village. Some persons gathered there, they were against him. They insulted. Buddha listened. And then he said, I am to reach to the other village in time. So can I go now? If you have said whatsoever you have come to say, if it is finished, then I can move. Or if you have to say something more to me while returning back, I will wait here. You can come and tell me. Those persons were just surprised. They couldn't understand. They were insulting and using bad words, abusing. So they said, but we are not saying something to you. We are abusing and insulting you. Buddha said, you can do that. But if you want any reaction from me, you have come late. 10 years before, if you had come with such words, I would have reacted. But now, I have learned how to act. I am a master now of myself. You cannot force me to do anything. So you will have to go back. You cannot disturb me. Nothing can disturb me now. Because I have known my own center. This knowledge of the center, or this grounding in the center, makes you a master. Otherwise you are a slave, and a slave of so many, not only of one master, so many. Everything is a master, and you are a slave to the whole universe. Obviously, you will be in trouble with so many masters pulling you in so many directions and dimensions. You are never together. You are not in unity. And pulled to so many dimensions, you are in anguish. Only a master of oneself can transcend anguish. The second technique, this so-called universe appears as a juggling, a picture so. To be happy, look upon it so. This so-called universe appears as a juggling, a picture so. To be happy, look upon it so. This whole world is just like a drama. Don't be too serious about it. Seriousness will force you into trouble. You will get into trouble. Don't be serious about it. Nothing is serious. This whole world is just a drama. If you can look to the whole world as a drama, you will gain to your original consciousness. Because the dust gathers, because you are so serious. That seriousness creates problems. And we are so serious that even while seeing a drama, we gather dust. Go to a picture house and look at spectators. Don't look at the screen. Just forget the picture. Don't look at the screen. Just look at the spectators in the hall. Someone will be weeping and tears will be rolling down. Someone will be laughing. Someone will get sexually excited. Just look at the people, what they are doing, what is happening to them. And there is nothing on the screen. Just pictures, pictures of light and shadow. The screen is vacant. But how they are getting excited? They are weeping, crying, laughing. The picture is not just a picture. The film is not just a film. They have forgotten that it is just a story. They have taken it seriously. It has become alive. It is real. And this is happening everywhere. Not only in a picture house. Look at the life that is all around you, what it is. Many people have lived on this earth. Where you are sitting, at least 10 dead bodies are buried in that place. And they were too serious like you. They are no more. Where have gone their lives? Where have gone their problems? They were fighting. Fighting for a single inch of earth. And the earth is there. And they are no more. And I am not saying their problems were not problems. They were as your problems are problems. Serious problems of life and death. But where are their problems? And if the whole humanity disappears any day, the earth will be there, the trees will grow, and the rivers will flow, and the sun will rise, and the earth will not feel any absence that where is humanity. Look at the look back, look forward, look to all dimensions, what you are and what your life is. It looks like a long dream. And everything you take so seriously, this moment, next moment becomes useless. You may not even remember it. Remember your first love. How serious it was. Life depended on it. Now you don't remember it at all. It is forgotten. And whatsoever you are thinking today that your life depends on will be forgotten. Life is a flux. Nothing remains. It is like a film, moving. And everything changes into everything else. But in the moment you feel it is very serious and get disturbed. This technique says, This so-called universe appears as a juggling, a picture so, to be happy look upon it so. In India, we have called this world not a creation of God, but a play, a game, a leela. This concept of leela is beautiful, because creation seems serious. The Christian, the Jewish God is very serious. Even a single disobedience on the part of Adam, and he was thrown out of the garden. And not only he was thrown, because of him, the whole humanity, because he was our father, and we are suffering because of him. The God seems to be so serious. He should not be disobeyed. And then he is going to take revenge. And the revenge has been so long. The sin doesn't seem to be so serious. Really, Adam committed it because of God's own foolishness. God the Father said to Adam, don't go near to the tree of knowledge, and don't eat its fruit. This prohibition becomes an invitation, and this is psychological. In that big garden, only that tree of knowledge became attractive. It was prohibited. Any psychologist can say God committed a mistake. If this was so, and the fruit of that tree was not to be eaten, it was good not to talk it about at all. There was no possibility of Adam reaching to that tree, and the whole humanity would have been in the garden. But this saying, this order, that don't eat, this don't, created the whole trouble. And because he disobeyed, he was thrown out of heaven. And the revenge seemed so long. And Christians say Jesus was crucified just to redeem that sin that Adam committed. So the whole Christian concept of history hangs on two persons, Adam and Jesus. Adam committed the sin, and Jesus repented for it and allowed himself to be crucified. He suffered so that Adam's sin may be forgiven. But it doesn't seem that the God has forgiven yet. Jesus is crucified, but humanity goes on suffering in the same way. The very concept of a Father God is ugly, serious. The Indian concept is not of a creator. The God is just a player. It is non-serious. It is just a game. Rules are there, but rules of game. You need not be serious about them. Nothing is sin, only errors. And you suffer because of errors, not because God punishes you. You suffer because of the rules you don't follow. God is not punishing you. The whole concept of leela gives life a dramatic color. It becomes a long drama. And this technique is based on that concept. this so-called universe appears as a juggling, a picture so. To be happy, look upon it so. If you are unhappy, you have taken it too seriously. So don't try to find out any way how to be happy. Just change your attitude. You cannot be happy with a serious mind. With a festive mind, you can be happy. Take this whole life as a myth, as a story. It is so. But once you take it so, you will not be unhappy. Unhappiness comes out of too much seriousness. Try for 7 days. For 7 days, remember only one thing, that the whole world is just a drama. And you will not be the same again. Just for 7 days, you are not going to lose much, because you don't have anything to lose. So you can try it. For 7 days, take the whole thing as a drama, just a soul. These 7 days will give you many glimpses of your Buddha nature, of your inner purity. And once you have the glimpse, you cannot be the same again. And you cannot conceive what type of happiness can happen to you. Because you have not known any happiness. You have known only degrees of unhappiness. Sometimes more unhappy, sometimes less unhappy. And when less unhappy, you call it happiness. You don't know what happiness is. Because you cannot know with the concept of the world taken very seriously, you cannot know what happiness is. Happiness happens only when you are grounded in this attitude that the world is just a play. Try it. And do everything in a very festive way, celebrating, doing an act. Not a real thing. You are a husband, be a play husband. You are a wife, be a play wife. Just in game. And there are rules, of course. Any game to be played needs rules. Marriage is a rule. And divorce is a rule. Don't be serious about them. There are rules. And one rule begets another. So divorce is bad, because marriage is bad. One rule begets another. But don't take them seriously. And then look how the quality of your life changes immediately. Go to your home this night and behave with your wife or husband or your children as if you are doing a part in a drama, and see the beauty of it. If you are doing a part, you will try to be efficient, but you will not get disturbed. There is no need. You will do the part and go to sleep. But remember, it is a part. And for 7 days, continuously follow this attitude. Happiness can happen to you. And once you know what happiness is, you need not move into unhappiness, because it is your choice. You are unhappy because you have chosen it. Wrong attitude towards life. You can be happy if you choose a right attitude. Buddha pays so much attention on right attitude. He makes it a base a foundation, right attitude. What is right attitude? What is the criterion? To me, this is the criterion. The attitude that makes you happy is right attitude. And there is no objective criterion. The attitude that makes you unhappy and miserable is the wrong attitude. The criterion is subjective. Your happiness is the criterion. The third technique, O beloved, put attention neither on pleasure nor on pain, but between these. O beloved, put attention neither on pleasure nor on pain, but between these. Everything is polar, and mind moves from one polarity to another, never staying in between. Have you known it when you were neither happy nor unhappy? Have you known any moment when you were neither healthy nor sick? Have you known any moment when you were neither this nor that, just in between, just in the middle, right in the middle? Mind moves from one pole to another immediately. If you are happy, sooner or later you will move to unhappiness, and you will move immediately. The happiness will disappear and you will be unhappy. You are feeling good, sooner or later you will feel bad. And there is no point where you stay in between. You immediately move from this to that, just like a pendulum of an old clock. Move from left to right, from right to left, and the pendulum goes on moving. And there is a secret law. When the pendulum is going to left, it appears going to left, but it is gathering momentum to go right. When it is going to left, it is gathering energy, momentum, to go right. When it is going to right, it is gathering momentum to go to left. So what appears is not the whole. When you are getting happy, you are gathering momentum to get unhappy. So whenever I see you laughing, the moment is not far away when you will be weeping. In Indian villages, old mothers know this. And when a child starts laughing too much, they say, stop him. He will weep. It is bound to be so. If a child is so much happy, the next step can nothing be but unhappiness. So stop him, otherwise he will be unhappy. But the same applies to the reverse, that is not known. When a child is weeping and you try to stop him, you are not only stopping his weeping, you are stopping his next step. He cannot be happy now. When a child is weeping, allow him, help him to weep more. So when weeping is finished, he has gathered momentum. Now he can move to the right. He can be happy. Now psychoanalysts say that when a child is weeping and is screaming, don't stop him, don't try to persuade him. Don't distract him. Don't try to focus his mind somewhere else. Don't bribe him to stop. Don't do anything, just remain silent near him and allow him to weep and cry and scream so that he can move easily to happiness. Otherwise, neither he can weep nor he can be happy. That's how we all have become. We cannot do anything. The smile is half-hearted, the tear is also half-hearted. Everything, confusion. But this is the natural law of mind. It moves from one pole to another. This technique is to change this natural law. O beloved, put attention neither on pleasure nor on pain, but between them, between these. Any piece can be chosen. And try to be just in between. What can you do to be in between? And how you will be in between? One thing. When pain is there, what you do? When pain is there, you want to escape from it. You don't want it. You try to go away from it. Your effort is to go to the opposite. To be happy, to be joyful. When there is happiness, what you do? Then your effort is to cling to it so that the other may not enter. To cling to it. When happiness is there, you cling. When pain is there, you escape. This is natural attitude. If you want to change this natural law and transcend it, when pain is there, don't try to escape. Remain with it. You will disturb the whole natural mechanism. You have headache. Remain with it. Close your eyes. Meditate on the headache. Remain with it. Don't do anything. Just be a witness. Don't try to escape. When happiness is there and you are feeling particularly blissful in any moment, don't cling to it. Close your eyes and remain a witness to it also. Clinging or escaping are natural for the dust-covered mind. If you remain a witness, you will sooner or later fall in between. Because the natural law is to move to the polarity, polar opposite. If you remain a witness, you fall in between. Buddha has called his whole philosophy Madhyam Nikaya, the middle way, because of this technique. He says, remain in the middle always, whatsoever the polarity, remain always in the middle. By witnessing, one remains in the middle. The moment you lose your witnessing, you become either attached or repulsed. If you are repulsed, you will go to the other extreme. If you are attached, you will try to remain at this extreme, but you will never be in between. Just be a witness. Don't be attracted, don't be repulsed. The headache is there, accept it. It is there as a fact. As the tree is there, as the house is there, as the night is there, the headache is there. Accept it and close your eyes. Don't try to escape from it. You are happy, accept the fact. Don't cling to it. And don't try so that you may not become unhappy. Don't try anything. If the unhappiness comes, allow it. If the happiness comes, allow it. Just remain a watcher on the hill. Just seeing things. The morning comes, and then the evening comes, and the sun rises, and then the sun sets, and then there are stars and darkness and again flash, and you are just a watcher on the hills. You cannot do anything. You simply see the morning has come. You note the fact. And you know now the evening will come. Because evening follows the morning. And now when the evening has come, you note the fact, and you know now the morning will be coming, because the morning follows the evening. When the pain is there, you are just a watcher, you know the pain has come, sooner or later it will go, and the polar opposite will come. And when the happiness has come, you know it is not going to remain always. The unhappiness will be just somewhere hidden. It will be coming. You remain a watcher. If you can watch without attraction and without repulsion, you will fall in the middle. And once the pendulum stops in the middle, you can look for the first time what the world is. While you are moving, you cannot know what the world is. Your movement confuses everything. Once you are not moving, you can look at the world. For the first time, you know what reality is. A non-moving mind knows what reality is. A moving mind cannot know what reality is. Your mind is just like a camera. You go on moving and taking shots. Whatsoever comes is just a confusion, because the camera must not move. If the camera is moving, the pictures are going just to be confusing. Your consciousness is moving from one pendulum to another, and whatsoever you know of reality is just a confusion, a nightmare. You don't know what is what. Everything is confused, mixed. If you remain in the middle and the pendulum has stopped, your consciousness is focused now, centered. You know what reality is. Only a mind unmoving can know what the truth is. O beloved, put attention neither on pleasure nor on pain, but between these. Fourth technique, objects and desires exist in me as in others, so accepting, let them be translated. Objects and desires exist in me as in others, so accepting, let them be transformed. This technique can be very helpful. You are angry and you always justify your anger. But when someone else gets angry, you always criticize. Your madness is natural. Others' madness is just perversion. Whatsoever you do is good, or even if it is not good, it was necessary to do. You find some rationalization for it. The same is done by others, but then the same rationalization is not given. If you are angry, you say it was necessary to help the other. If you were not angry, the other will be destroyed. He will get a wrong habit. It was good to give him punishment. It is just for his good. But when someone else gets angry upon you, the same rationalization is not applicable. Then he is mad. He is evil. We have double standards. One standard for oneself, and another standard for everyone else. This double standard mind is going to be in deep misery always. This mind is not just. And unless your mind is just, you cannot have a glimpse of the truth. Only a just mind. So leave this double standard. Jesus says, don't do to others what you would not like to be done to you. This means a single standard is needed. This technique is based on single standard. Objects and desires exist in me as in others. You are not exceptional, although everyone thinks he is exceptional. If you think you are exceptional, no, well, this is how every ordinary mind thinks. To know oneself that one is ordinary is the most extraordinary thing in this world. Someone asked Suzuki about his teacher. That what was exceptional in your teacher, Suzuki? Suzuki was a Zen master. So he said, only one thing I can never forget is this. I have never seen a man who thought himself so ordinary. He was just ordinary. And that is the most extraordinary thing. Because every ordinary mind thinks he is exceptional, extraordinary. No one is. And if you know this, you become extraordinary. Everyone is just like everyone else. The same desires that hover on you hover on everyone else. But your sex you call love. Others love you call sex. Whatsoever you do, you protect it. You say it is good, that's why you are doing. And the same thing done by others is not the same. And this happens not only to persons, this happens to races, to nations. This is what the whole world has become a mess because of this. If India goes on strengthening its army, it is for defense. China goes on strengthening its army, it is for attack. Every government in the world calls its military organization defense. Then who attacks? Everyone is defending. So who is the aggressor? If you move in history, you cannot find anyone who was aggressor. Of course, the defeated one proved to be aggressors. The defeated one always proved to be aggressors because they cannot write history. The victorious one write history. If Hitler could have won, then the history would have been different. Then he was the savior of the world, he was not the aggressor. Then Churchill and Roosevelt and everyone else was aggressor. And it was good that they are destroyed. Because he couldn't win, he is the aggressor. And Churchill and Roosevelt and everyone else and Stalin, they have saved humanity. Not only with persons, but with everything we do, as nations, as races, the same logic moves. We are something different. The other is different. No one is different. A religious mind knows everyone is the same. So if you give reference for yourself, please give the same rationalizations to others also. If you criticize others, then apply that same criticism to yourself. Don't make two standards. One standard will transform your being totally. Because with one standard, you become just. And for the first time, you can look straight into reality as it is. Objects and desires exist in me as in others. accepting, let them be transformed. Accept them and they will be transformed. What we are doing, we accept them that they exist in others. Whatsoever is wrong exists in others. Whatsoever is right exists in me. So how you can transform? You are already transformed. You think you are already good and everyone else is bad. The world needs a transformation, not you. That's why there are always leaders, movements, prophets who go on crying from the tops of the houses to change the world, to create a revolution. And we have been doing revolution and evolution and nothing changes. And the man remains the same and the earth remains in same misery. Only faces and labels change. Misery continues. It is not a question how to change the world. The world is not wrong. You are wrong. The question is how to change yourself. How to change myself is the religious quest. How to change everyone else is the political. The politician thinks he is okay. Really, he is the model. How the whole world should be. He is the model, he is the ideal. And it is up to him to change the whole. The religious man thinks whatsoever he sees in everyone else, he sees in himself also. If there is violence, he immediately thinks whether the violence exists in me or not. If there is greed, if he sees greed somewhere, the first reflection is whether the same greed is in me or not. And the more he searches, the more he finds that he is the source of all evils. Then it is not a question how to change the world. It is a question to change oneself. And the change starts the moment you accept one standard. You are already changing. Don't condemn others. I don't mean condemn yourself, no. Don't condemn others. And if you are not condemning others, you will have a deep compassion for them. Because the same problems are there. If someone commits a sin, sin in the eyes of the society, you start condemning him, never thinking it that you have the seed to commit that sin within you. If someone commits a murder, you condemn him. But have not you always have been thinking to kill someone, to murder? If not, the potential seed is there always. The man who has committed murder was not a murderer a moment before, but the seed was there. And the seed is with you also. A moment later, who knows, you may be a murderer. So don't condemn him. Rather accept. Then you will feel a deep compassion for him. Because whatsoever he has done, man is capable of doing. You are capable of doing it. Non-condemning mind will have compassion. A non-condemning mind will have a deep acceptance. He knows this is how humanity is. And this is how I am. Then the whole world will become just a reflection of your own self. It will become a mirror. Every face becomes a mirror for you. You look yourself in every face. Objects and desires exist in me as in others. So accepting, let them be transformed. Acceptance becomes transformation. This is difficult to understand. because we always reject, and then too we cannot transform anything. You have greed, you reject it. No one wants to think himself as greedy. You are sexual, you reject it. No one wants to feel oneself sexual. You are angry, you have anger, you reject it. You create a facet and you try to justify. You never feel that you are angry or you are anger. But rejection never transforms anything. It is. And that which is suppressed becomes more powerful. It moves to your roots, unconscious, deep down within you, and begins functioning from there. And from that darkness of the unconscious, it becomes more powerful. You cannot control it now because you are not even conscious of it. Acceptance brings everything up. There is no need to suppress. You know you are greedy. You know you have anger. You know you are sexual. And you accept them as natural facts with no condemnation. Then there is no need to suppress them. They come to the surface of the mind. And from the surface of the mind, they can be thrown very easily. From the deep center, they cannot be thrown. And when they are on the surface, you are always aware of them. When they are in the unconscious, you become unaware. And a disease you are aware can be cured. A disease you are unaware cannot be cured. Bring them on the surface. Accept your humanity, your animality. Whatsoever is there, accept it with no condemnation. It is there. And be aware of it. Greed is there. Don't try to make it non-greed. You cannot make it. And if you try to make it non-greed, you will simply suppress it. And your non-greed will be another form of greed and nothing else. Don't try to change it into the other. You cannot change. If you try to change greed, what you will do? And a greedy mind can be attracted only towards non-greed if some further greed is possible through it. If someone says that if you leave all your riches, you will be allowed in my kingdom of God, then you can even renounce. A further greed becomes possible. This is a bargain. Greed is not becoming non-greed. Greed is becoming transcendental greed. You cannot change. How a violent mind can become non-violent? If you force yourself to be non-violent, this will be a violence to yourself. You cannot change one into another. You can simply be aware and accepting. Accept greed as it is there. But acceptance is not meant that there is no need to transform it. But acceptance is only meant that you accept a fact, a natural fact. It is there. And then move in life knowing it well that greed is there. Do whatsoever you are doing, remembering well that greed is there. This awareness will transform greed. It transforms. Because knowingly you cannot be greedy. Knowingly you cannot be angry. For anger, for greed, for violence, unawareness is a basic requirement. Just as knowingly you cannot take poison. Knowingly you cannot put your hand into flame. Unknowingly you don't know what flame is, what fire is. You can put your hand. Knowingly that fire burns, you cannot put your hand into it. The more your knowingness grows, greed becomes a fire. Violence becomes a fire. Anger becomes poison. Simply they become impossible. Without any suppression, they disappear. And when greed disappears, without any ideal of non-greed, it has a beauty of its own. When violence disappears, without making you non-violent, it has a beauty of its own. Otherwise, a non-violent man is just deeply violent. That violence is there hidden. And you can have a glimpse of it from his non-violence also. He will force his non-violence upon himself and upon others in a very violent way. That violence has become subtle. This sutra says acceptance is transformation. Because through acceptance, awareness becomes possible. Enough for today.